Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. On behalf of Torah Motion, a pleasure to welcome as we continue with our winter series. We hope to see lots of you over the next little while. And it's a pleasure to introduce Dr. Bill William Gewirtz to give the first of a four-part series on the changing nature of time in Halakha. Dr. Gewirtz has been researching and studying these topics, the Talmudic topics, having to do with mathematical and scientific issues. He is a former CTO of AT&T Business, has a PhD in mathematical logic from Courant Institute, and is a consultant to a number of high-tech companies and investors. And this evening's lecture is being sponsored by Avi and Rivi Katz of Teaneck, New Jersey, in loving memory of Avi's father, Dr. I. Norman Katz, whose Yortzeit was today, the 9th of Shvat, which I guess if you're on the West Coast, it still is the 9th of Shvat. Dr. Katz was a family man, loved and beloved by his children and grandchildren, an Ish Eshkolot, a Renaissance man combining also the best of the worlds of Torah, Umada, a student of the Rav of Soloveitchik. He was a Talmud Chacham who loved to learn and to teach Torah to young and old alike. He was an esteemed professor of mathematics at Washington University in St. Louis for almost 50 years. And no doubt would have enjoyed tonight's lecture by another scholar, mathematician, and Talmud Chacham, Dr. Gewirtz. So with that, Vakasha, we look forward to the beginning of our series. Dr. Gewirtz, it's all yours.
Thank you. We're going to talk about the factors that Chazal depended on in the formation of the calendar. Now, those factors are not to be found in the literature. If you go through the Gemara, you will find next to nothing, not just on the factors and the motivations, you'll find next to nothing on what is called Sota Ibur. Sota Ibur is, you know, there's a few important facts. We'll mention a few of them as we go. But how the calendar is constructed, what the basic rules are, what they are dependent on, is really, you know, was a mystery. It was not written down. It was known, obviously, to a small group of rabbis. Why they called it Sota Ibur, fact is that once you understand it, it's not so mysterious. It's actually not even that hard. I will tell, you know, I hope after this lecture, maybe a bit of the next lecture, most of you will be ready to tackle the Jewish calendar. And I'll reference you if you want all of the details, which I am not going to go into. I'm really more interested in how Chazal set the thing up in general to get it roughly right, as opposed to all of the refinements that they made to get it in their minds exactly right. The calendar was first written down in rough form by a Muslim mathematician who was amazed at its accuracy. And that was in about the 8th or 9th century. So we don't have anything before the 8th or 9th century that describes the calendar in detail. Among Jewish sources, the first person to write down the calendar was, of course, the Rambam. The Rambam wrote Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, which consists of basically three parts. The first five chapters are about Kiddush Al Pi Riya, as it was done historically, where witnesses came and talked about a new moon. Rosh, the Beis Din interrogated them. If they accepted them, they declared a new moon. And that's the first five chapters. The next five chapters are a detailed view of how the fixed calendar that's in use today was actually set up. The remainder of Kiddush HaChodesh, for those who have gotten that far, is the Rambam explaining the background. Now, what people, you know, everyone knows about the Rambam, but the Rambam did not really consider himself the greatest Talmudist. The greatest Talmudist, in his opinion, was his father's Rebbe, the Rimi Gash, who was a Talmud of the Rif, who was a Talmud by correspondence school of Rav Haigon. So the Rambam considered the Rimi. We have very few of the Rimi Gash's writing. We have his commentary in Baba Basra, but it is probable that he wrote commentary on all of Shas. And the Rambam had access to his father's notes as he was a Talmud. The Rambam was not the greatest physician. Close to the greatest physician, but his best students went to intern, so to speak, to use an anachronistic term, with a Muslim doctor somewhere up in Syria. And the Rambam did not claim to be the greatest philosopher of his time. That he attributed to various Muslim philosophers, most of famous of whom was Averroes. The one thing the Rambam did agree, which people don't realize, is that he was the greatest astronomer of his time. So in addition to Dr. Talmudist, philosopher, the Rambam was well equipped to write down the laws of Kiddush HaChodesh, which he did very, very accurately. Now, if you read Kiddush HaChodesh, the first five chapters begin to sort of slack off in various places on the number of Perushim. When you come to the mechanics of the Jewish calendar, the Perushim dwindle to less than a handful. The end of Kiddush HaChodesh, where the Rambam goes into real astronomy, that's a subject for a different day. If thankfully, you don't really need to know those fundamentals to understand Kiddush HaChodesh or the motivation, but the Rambam wanted to make sure that if you really want to engage in this topic, that you're well-grounded. Now, the Rambam also said, maybe tongue-in-cheek, but I think he was serious, that what's going on in the laws of Kiddush HaChodesh can be explained to an average teenager in about a week. It seems that he did not write that manual. And as a result, it's been difficult for people. Now, in my mind, I think the reason for that is that when you enter the world of Kiddush HaChodesh, either reading the Rambam or the next exposition was by the Tur, the son of the Rush, who also created a much more tabular, and in a certain sense, again, you know that the Baal HaTurim was a great mathematician, great mathematical mind. So his ability to characterize and rationalize was pretty impressive. And he also created the Jewish calendar, which is included in the Tur. But other than that, we really, we have the calendar and we practice it, but there's not a lot of commentary on what's going on. So what I want to do is what I want to address is, we'll get the parts of the calendar, but I really want to address what Chazal were trying to do. What were their objectives, and how did they satisfy their objectives? So their objectives were twofold. The first objective was what we read last Shabbos, HaChodesh Hazeh Yeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim, and tells us that Pesach must occur in Chodesh Aviv, that the Passover, Seder, Karbonot, Isur Melacha, Chametz, all these halachas that surround Pesach are supposed to occur in Chodesh Aviv in the spring, to be more precise. Now, that motivation was paramount in the eyes of Chazal in establishing a fixed calendar. They had to make sure that regardless of all the details of the calendar, Pesach is always occurring in the beginning, middle maybe, of the spring season. The second thing, obviously, they wanted Rosh Chodesh to be roughly, and I say roughly, not exactly, because if you're looking for exactitude, you're not going to find it. for a variety of reasons we're going to get to later, but they wanted that the calendar that they establish, that Rosh Chodesh in that calendar, occur in close proximity to the appearance of a new moon. So those are not very, very hard objectives. They're not hard to state. They're not so easy to implement. But in terms of objectives, those are really the only two fundamental objectives. We're going to get to a third halachic consideration that played in their mind. But if you understand those two objectives, and we'll get to a bit later on, a halachic objective that they had as well, that really covers in the broad sense how the calendar was constructed. I would argue everything beyond that is a detail, which we will not go into. We'll go into a little bit of it at the very end when we talk about the dateline, where surprisingly, one of the details of Kiddush HaChodesh rears its head. So it's easier for me to deal with it there. It's more relevant there, and it's less relevant here. So how did they do this? You know, Chazal knew that the lunar month, they knew roughly how long the lunar month was. They also knew something that I am not certain everyone on the call knows, that the length of a lunar month is not constant. In fact, the length of a lunar month varies from month to month by as much as 18 hours, the shortest lunar month being a few hours more than 29 days, and the longest lunar month comes pretty close to 30 days. So the length of a lunar month is quite variable, and Chazal knew that. And if you were going to try to construct a fixed calendar based on the actual point at which the lunar month begins, you know, 20 years from now, you know, and you don't have a computer, good luck. You're not gonna find that task very, very easy. Chazal also knew that the lunar month was give or take around 29 and a half hours. And as we'll see, Chazal knew that number significantly more accurately than 29 and a half hours, but assume for a moment it's 29 and a half hours. In 12 months, you cover about 354 days. 12 times 29 and a half, you can do the multiplication, is 354. The easier way to do that is 12 times 30 is 60, and 12 times a half is 6. Subtract 6 from 360, 354. Now, if they only had lunar months, then we would have a calendar like the Muslim calendar. Ramadan floats because every 12 months, Pesach would occur. The solar calendar, which determines seasons, is about 365 days. So 11 days every year, we would start falling earlier and earlier. And suddenly, you know, we would be celebrating Pesach when it's snowing out. Life would not be good. So what Chazal knew was a relationship that goes back to the times of Ezra. So Ezra, so far, we're talking 5th century BCE. There was a Greek mathematician astronomer by the name of Meitan. Now, you have to know a little bit about Greek mathematicians and astronomers back then. They had various beliefs about numbers and about the universe. And in their mind, things were a lot more rational. I mean that in the strict mathematical sense, as well as the colloquial English sense. Things were a lot more rational. And Meitan thought that 19 solar years equals 235 months. So think of that, 235 months. Now, 235 months, if you multiply 19 times 12, you can I'll do it if you'd like, is 228. So what Matan said, if you want lunar months and solar years to correspond, every 19 years, you have to add 7 months. And this was well known. All learned people in ancient Greece and Rome, and I would argue Chazal as well, were well aware that of Matan. And well, yeah, how we know that, you know, even the Rambam, with all of his expertise, was a devotee of Matan's equation. I'll tell you in a few minutes how you can sort of derive that, not directly from the text, but indirectly from the text. So every 19 years, you have to add 7 months. And if you do that, then Matan and then the rabbis believed that you would create a perfect calendar. Now, when are you going to add this month? Well, historically, what did Chazal do when they were doing Kiddush al Pi Riya? They added an extra Adar in order to push Pesach further closer to the spring. If it was too cold out, or because Pesach would be occurring before the equinox, or for any other set of agricultural reasons, what Chazal would do is if they had to, they would add a month. And they knew that roughly every 19 years, if they added 7, life would be perfect. Occasionally, the Gemara reports that they occasionally pushed off and added a month every 2 years in a row, which would obviously push Pesach much further than any of us have ever celebrated Pesach. But for the most part, they would wait a couple of years, they'd add a month, and life would go on. Now, what Matan thought, and what Chazal certainly thought, was this 235 months and 19 years was not what I would call a relationship, approximately correct, but it was an equation. So they thought, if I knew how long 235 months took, divide that number by 19. So that I'm not asking you to do with a pencil and paper, but if you take the length of a month, multiply that length by 235, divide by 19, you would get the exact length of a solar year. Now, that's important because in the ancient world, in fact, even up to, you know, a few hundred years ago, it was hard as whatever to determine the length of a solar year. So Matan's real interest, he kind of knew about the length of a lunar month, which we'll get to very shortly. So his goal was to know the length of a solar year, which he was able to derive based on, he was able to multiply by 235 and divide by 7, and life was fine. Okay, so let's leave Matan alone for a little bit, and let's talk about the lunar month. Now, the lunar month, as I told you, is not a fixed amount. It varies from some months being, you know, 29 and a couple of hours to other months where it's almost 30 hours. And this variability was not understood then. It would take well more than 4 lectures to explain all that variability today. And it requires a lot of mathematics, and it's not at all important. But here's the most important but. Back even to the period of Bayis Rishon, this really shocks people. There are those, for sure the Babylonians, and I would suspect even the Assyrians who came before them. They knew 2 facts about the calendar, which were absolutely unbelievable. At the time of a new moon, when there is, not when the new moon is visible, but when the moon, sits between the earth and the sun and begins to disappear at the only time that you can have a solar eclipse is exactly at the beginning of a month. Not when you can see a new moon, but when the actual point at which what the Hebrew word molad refers to, when the new moon is born. Now, the new moon, when it's born, is not yet visible. We'll get into how long it takes for things to actually be seen. But this molad has to occur at the time of a solar eclipse. And hence, for at least 600 years, perhaps 700 years, there are from people who have argued that this calculation was already known in Bayis Rishon. There is no strong evidence, but for sure, the Babylonians who came at the end of Bayis Rishon knew this fact, and scientists, astronomers back then would do something which I'm not going to explain in detail. They would mark the exact time of a solar eclipse. Now, you can ask, how did they do that? You know, what mechanism did they use to keep track of time? And the answer is, they had sand clocks. They had various mechanisms in the ancient world that allowed people to actually write down the exact time. And then they would wait till for the next solar eclipse. And they would say, okay, those two solar eclipses, by my rough calculation, were around 370 months apart. You know, 30 years. Let me divide by 300, and, you know, let me divide by, you know, 370, and I'm going to get the length, the average length of a month. Now, these calculations were extremely rudimentary. They weren't very accurate. But in the modern world of venture capital, there was a wonderful book written, God is in the Crowd. I think the late Rabbi Sachs recommended that book because of some of the author's statements about religion. But anyway, if you look at what that book is basic thesis is, asking people to predict the future is a pretty futile act. None of us are very good. But on the average, if you can discern what the average of all the people in the universe think they might want at some point in time, you're going to get to a pretty accurate view of what's going on. The same thing turned out to be true with these sort of calculations. People calculated all sorts of numbers for the length of the average month, or the length, the amount of time on the average between points of, you know, points at which a new moon was born. So as a result, they were able to approximate. They also had a second thing. They can also, you have a lunar eclipse, which happens differently than solar eclipses. Lunar eclipses only occur at a full moon. So whenever there's a full moon, so if you measure between two full moons, again, you get, divide that by the number of months that have gone by, again, you get the average length of a month. So what scientists from Babylonia, through Persia, through Greece, to Rome, the Chazal, they became aware of a calculation that gave them the average length of a month. Chazal recorded that number. It's in the Gemara. That number was 29 and a half days, adding 793 divided by 1080. So if you want to know the length of an average month, it's 29.5, then add whatever 793 over 1080 turns out to be. And that is the basis on which Chazal built the calendar. They knew they had to have an extra month. And then on the average of all the lengths of months, which they knew varied significantly, almost 18 hours. If you average those lengths over a very long period of time, that average is going to come out to 29 and a half plus 793 over 1080. There's no test afterwards. You don't have to remember that. I will tell you one interesting fact about this, which really surprised me. The Rambam, there are very few comments on the Rambam Hilchos Kiddush HaKodesh in the part on the calculation. There are really two questions, one asked by the Ravid and one asked by many later authorities. The Rambam explains why Chazal used 1080, which is, 1080 is not the first number that would come to mind. So what the Rambam says is 1080 is divisible by 2, by 3, by 4, by 5, by 6, by 8, by 9, by 10, by 12, everything but 7 and 11. So 1080 is a nice number. And what people, in this question, surprisingly, I never found an answer. The answer is trivial, but maybe I'll wait till the end and maybe some of you will figure it out. Why do we need 1080? 360, if you try, is divisible by all those numbers. 1080 is 3 times 360. So already, 360 is divisible by 3. So why do we have to go to 1080? We could have just gone with 360. You can think about that. But Chazal, for good reason, did not use 360. They chose 1080. Now, if you take what Chazal did, and again, you can do this long arithmetic afterwards, write out 793 over 1080 as a fraction, add it to 29 and a half, you're going to get the average length of a month, 29. Okay. That number, surprisingly, is correct to 6 decimal places. In other words, this weird looking at points where there are solar eclipses and lunar eclipses, dividing by the number of intervening months, was able to derive a number which was correct to 6 decimal places. I let the cat out of the bag. Today, we have much more accurate scientific methods. Guess what? We now know the number to 8 decimal places. So after, almost 2,000 years, at least 1,500 years, this is an area, thank God, other parts of science advanced more quickly. But in terms of astronomy, I think I mention this because we in general underappreciate the astronomers of old. They didn't have all the mathematical tools, but their observation of the sky was not something to be trifled with. And they were able to do calculations well beyond what many of us think are possible. So we'll come back to this. Now, this particular calculation, 29 and a half plus 793 over 1080, if you look in the Gemara, this creates for the winter solstice, the summer solstice, the spring equinox, the fall equinox, that creates what is called in the Gemara Tikufot de Rabbi Ada. The Tikufot of Rabbi Ada is take 3 of those months and you'll get the period between 2 Tikufot. And Tikufot de Rabbi Ada are what Chazal used in construction of the calendar. For things that, for whatever reason, were not as serious an issue, they used the Julian calendar, otherwise known as Tikufot de Shmuel. For those of you who want to know, where did Shmuel get his Tikufot? That's the way Rome, out of scholarly circles, figured out equinoxes. So Tikufot de Shmuel are off by significantly more than the Gufot de Rabbi Yada, but the Gufot de Rabbi Yada were more than sufficient for the calendar. And it really is the only place where the Gufot of Rabbi Yada that I know of are used for, you know, halachic reasons. So basically now we have Matan and we have this approximation, and now we're good to go. Now, the other thing that now we have to get into a little bit, and Chazal were aware of this. Now, who in Chazal knew what, when? There are books you can read. The most extensive is by Shasser Stern about the Jewish calendar. I'm not convinced that we know, you know, in a categorical sense. We have good guesses. I personally believe that even in the times of Tanoim, there are Tanoim who were aware of a lot of the science, even though they were Mekadesh Alpiria, because as the Gemara says, Rabban Gamliel had charts in his office. I don't know if we'd call it an office back then, but he had charts wherever he was sitting and was able to examine witnesses. And if you start thinking about what those charts may have contained, it's very possible, going all the way back to there, and if you read various sugyot, things that appear rather quizzical, this may explain some of the odd behavior, odd in quotation marks, that's often attributed to Rabban Gamliel. But anyway, the problem is that up to now, we've been talking about the actual moment. In other words, when the moon is actually born. So, so from that point, we derived the average molot. Okay, we got that number down. But what we're interested in every month is not the average. The average, is of no interest. Why do I care about an average? Why do I care about the actual molot? I want to know when this conjunction took place. When was a new moon born? The problem is there are really three problems, and whether the way I describe it now, how it relates to what the various sugyot define, again, is another topic for another very long sequence of lectures. If you go through all of the different Mamari Chazal that talked about the length of time between this and that and all the rather. First point is when the moon is first born, the sunlight completely obliterates any ability to see anything. And until the moon moves a little bit out of the midpoint of the sun and the earth, being in between, it takes a fair number of hours for the moon to get to a point where it's actually visible. That fair number of hours is large. It's 50 or 60 hours, give or take 24 hours. The reason it's so large is you don't see a new moon except directly after sunset. Once the sun disappears, the moon disappears. There's no, there's not enough light. The sun can shine on the moon when there's something to shine on. But if all there is this little sliver, you can only see that little sliver at a very, very, for a very short interval of time. Last little sliver before sunrise, this little sliver after sunset. So that causes a significant period, very variable, not easily describable, not known to science back in the times of Chazal. That's one problem. The second problem I mentioned, but mentioned again, the actual period from one conjunction, from one new moon to the next new moon was variable. It could be 29 days and 3 hours, or it could be 29 days and 21 hours. So having known when it was last time does not necessarily help you know when it's going to be next time. So that, again, caused variability in knowing the length of a month. Finally, the moon goes on circuits. It covers the Earth, but sometimes it goes way below the equator towards, Australia. Sometimes it goes way above the equator, northern Europe, and sometimes it goes somewhere in between. The moon, now when the moon goes on its most southerly path, seeing anything from the moon, seeing a sliver in the north or in Eretz Yisrael is further delay. This happened, I believe, 7 or 8 years ago, where the Muslims had Rosh Chodesh on Sunday and we had Rosh Hashanah on Thursday. And that was a year when, for whatever reason, the moon was not visible over Jerusalem. Actually, the Jewish calendar was a little bit better, actually. But nonetheless, if you were looking for by observation, you would not see a moon till the day after Rosh Hashanah. So, these sorts of problems occur. Now, fortunately, Chazal did not deal with any of this. Here comes now the most simplifying of assumptions that Chazal made to make all of this palatable. In other words, Chazal from this had to form a calendar. And already I've told you more information than they wanted to use. So what they did to make life a little bit more tolerable was they decided that they would establish Rosh Hashanah based on the Moloch. So whenever there was a calculation that a Molad was going to occur, now how they found the base, another conversation, not for today, they would add, 12 or 13 times 29 and a half plus 793 over 1080, and they would get the next Molad. And they would say, okay, I got the Molad for Rosh Hashanah, and that day is Rosh Hashanah. And that's it. Once Rosh Hashanah was fixed, every other month of that year, depending on which of the 19 years of the cycle it is, the Rosh Chodesh of every month was fixed based on the Rosh Chodesh of Rosh Hashanah. There was no more, it's exactly the opposite of what all of you would expect based on going to shul. If you go to shul, right, every month of the year, they declare the Molad. Every month, except the month of Elul. The month of Elul, there's no Molad declared. The only Molad that Chazal used in establishing the fixed calendar was the Molad of following Elul, the Molad of Rosh Hashanah. So Chazal, basically, why we announce the Molad every year, especially in years when there's a solar eclipse, when people who know a little bit about the calendar, tend to go crazy. I get lots of interesting questions. The eclipse was here and this was then. And what's really going on? Chazal, again, they knew that they're not going to get it exactly right. So basically, in order to simplify life, they basically established a yearly calendar based on only knowing what year of the 19-year cycle it was and when the first day of Rosh Hashanah was. And that is all they knew. And of course, they decided to add the 3rd, the 6th, the 8th, the 11th, the 14th, the 16th, and the 19 years were when they added a 13th month. There's some complexity about Marcheshwan and Kislev, which Chazal set up. But otherwise, for the most part, months alternate between 29 and 30. And the only, and except again, Marcheshwan and Kislev, there are some extra rules that have to be abided by. And that basically was all they did in conceptualizing the calendar. Now, the one halachic issue that they had to deal with which really was very much a halachic issue. And it's interesting to ask why they created, there are four rules for what are called dechiyot. You may have heard that there are four times when the Molad and Rosh Hashanah do not coincide. And what Chazal did is they would push Rosh Hashanah off to the next day. Now, dechiyot, won't go into it, they can cascade. Two can be true in a given year. The Rosh Hashanah can be pushed off 2 days. The Rambam, I would argue, not one of his clearest expositions, explains why that's not a problem. And he does it in such that the Ravid, it's the only comment the Ravid gives on this part of Kiddush HaChodesh. He says, I don't understand astronomy, but I also don't understand what he's talking about. There was a much easier explanation in the Gemara why the Rambam had to create his own explanation. The answer is the Rambam was explaining the Gemara scientifically. Because the Gemara basically had an answer, and the Rambam wanted to sort of buttress that answer with some scientific background. Anyway, of those dechiyot, one dechiyah we will cover when we talk about dateline. It is probably the most famous dechiyah, that if the Molad is after 12 noon, then Rosh Hashanah is not that day, but the next day. That we'll talk about a bit later on. We really don't know. I don't know. Maybe one of you will figure it out. I don't really understand why that was established. That particular dechiyah was argued about until about 100 years after Sadia Gaon. Sadia Gaon's dispute in the 9th century had to do with that dechiyah. The other two, the third and the fourth dechiyah, I won't even begin to, they were derived from Chazal's desire to have the length of the year be one of 3 days if it's 12 months, 353, 354, or 355, or one of three lengths if it's 13 months. The only logical or halachic dechiyah that we understand sort of fully is the famous dechiyah that you may have heard, Lo Adu Rosh, for Aleph meaning Sunday, Dalet meaning Wednesday, Vav Adu, the Vav being Friday. Now the Du part, the Dalet and the Vav, are very easy. If someone dies, and they did not have quite the level of refrigeration, they didn't lie in state for a few weeks. They could be embalmed, which is not halachically permissible. But if you didn't embalm them, and you don't have refrigerated whatever, after a period of time, the body is going to begin to decay, and that decay will cause odors that you would not find very pleasant. So since Yom Kippur falling on a Friday or a Sunday would mean that there are two consecutive days in which you are not allowed to bury, Chazal did not want Rosh Hashanah to fall on a Wednesday. Because if Rosh Hashanah is on a Wednesday, then Yom Kippur would be on a Friday. If Rosh Hashanah was on a Friday, Yom Kippur would be on Sunday. And since Chazal did not want that to occur, they said due cannot be Rosh Hashanah. 4 and 6 are excluded. Aleph is a more interesting history. One that I'm, that I have, I'll explain it to you, but then there's an obvious question. Aleph has to do with Bayesheni. In Bayesheni, the major period of Bayesheni, the Beit HaMikdash was under the control of the Tzedukim. They were not followers of the rabbinic calendar that we know, Kiddush Al Piriyah, nor were they followers of the fixed calendar. They had their own calendar. Chazal do not, what's interesting about Chazal, they tell you everything wrong with that calendar. What you don't find in the Talmudic literature is some of the niceties of that calendar. And I hate to say it, there are various niceties of that calendar. Pesach always occurred on the fourth day like it did in Mitzrayim. Shavuos was just like all the other important holidays. It happened on the 15th of Sivan. So the calendars that Stukim used, which now are obviously available to us, they're in many volumes of the Apocrypha. Tzedukim had a major argument with the rabbis about Hoshana Rabbah and, the taking of the willows and that whole ceremony, which Chazal did even on Shabbos, where there would be a quote-unquote violation of Shabbos. The Tzedukim, when they were in charge, they did away with that. So Chazal said, we don't want Hoshana Rabbah falling on Shabbos, because we're not doing, anything as a zecher to that particular ceremony. So we don't want people to think that we've all turned into tzedukim. So since we don't do anything like that on a Shabbos, we don't want, we don't want Hoshana Rabbah to fall on Shabbos. The way to guarantee that, that's the Aleph. If Rosh Hashanah would be on the first day of the month and the first day of the week, the 21st day of the week, which is Hoshana Rabbah, would be on Shabbos. So that caused the rule of Lo Adu Rosh. So Lo Adu Rosh basically gives us the rule that that postponed Rosh Hashanah one day, and then the second rule, which I'm not talking about that much, happened more frequently. You can imagine that the Molad would fall equally in each of the four parts of the day. The day for calendar purposes is 6 to 6. So 12 to 6 is 1/4 of the day. And 1/4 of the time, that Dechia would push off Rosh Hashanah. Adu is 3 out of 7 of the days of the week. So you had two factors that are roughly true a half of the time. One or the other is going to occur probably close to half the time. Two will occur a quarter of the time. None of them will occur about half the time. So that was basically what Chazal did, and they had to make up for all of this. If they pushed things off, they had to move them back so they would adjust. 1:30 became 29. So the rest of the calendar, I'll refer to them again at the end. There are a variety of detailed descriptions of the calendar that you can look at. And what is still not trivial to figure out is how all those fine points corrected for the postponement of Rosh Hashanah. Now, the fundamental point about all this is that it's not really postponed, because the Molad occurs well before the first moon is visible. So even though Chazal declared Rosh Hashanah based on the Molad, had we been using Kiddush Al Pi Ria taking place ostensibly in Yerushalayim or wherever there was a Besan HaGadol, then in theory, we would be celebrating everything a bit later. We'll get back to this. This is this bothers people. It certainly does not bother me. But you will have to address that, because the system that Chazal established did not correspond. Their goal was not to correspond the system to what they did, because what they did was extremely sensitive to both factors of how long, when the conjunction actually occurred, how long the months were, you know, where in the sky the moon was rotating, way south, way north, over the equator. There were all sorts of factors that would cause Chazal to one way or the other, delay the point of Rosh Hashanah. Now, going back just, to close up, if anyone has thought of a reason, for 1080 versus 360, you can unmute yourself and you can talk. You have the right to speak. If hearing no one, I will tell you the answer is, you know, those of you with mathematical backgrounds should feel a little bit upset about once I tell you how simple it is. We have how many seconds in an hour? Oh, you're all muted. 3,600 seconds in an hour. Chazal, in the times of Chazal, scientists were not able to measure time to 360,000th of an hour. However, what the Rambam, what they want much preferred, what they were able to do, which was around 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 parts of an hour. So what the Rambam said was Chazal could have picked 1,000, could have picked 1,200. Everybody on this call would have been very happy had they done that, because 1,000 and 1,200 sounded a hell of a lot better than 1080, which is kind of a weird number. But the Rambam explained that 1080 was a very good number, because 1080 has all the right divisors. Yeah, of course, I don't want to use 360. If I use 360, telling me the number of halakim of 360 is incredibly less precise. You can't express a number as precise as 793 over 1080 as a fraction with 360 in the denominator. So Chazal were trying to do as best they can. And again, as I mentioned, the science that they adopted in the last 1500 years has improved that number by 2 decimal places. So that turns out, which I think we're going to stop before we go into, let me just tell you what we're going to finish up next time. Given where we are and what we're doing, Rabbi Kelman, I suspect that next lecture I'm going to move into the Chazon Ish, to the Chasam Sofer, because I don't think I'm going to fill the whole hour. What comes next is first a little bit about the inaccuracies and what they mean practically. The second thing I want to do is in an entirely, on the other side of my brain, I was a Talmud of the Rav Zatzal for a good number of years. And he and his uncle both wrote extensively, in shiurim, in articles about Kiddush HaChodesh. Why Brisk and Kiddush HaChodesh? I haven't gotten into any of, the Brisker alumnus of how Kiddush HaChodesh actually works conceptually. Who gave Chazal the right to do this and da-da-da-da-da-da. But so next time I'm going to explain, based on one of the Rav's Yartzeit shiur, why all of this and all the inaccuracies, it's not a problem. We don't have to, as some people, love to describe all the inaccuracies. I'm going to explain to you why all those inaccuracies are less than the inaccuracies that existed Yimei Chazal. And Yimei Chazal, and now, there are good Brisker Terutzim, why we shouldn't be upset about the inaccuracies. So next time, we're going to very accurately, not very accurately, close enough for government work, describe the level of the inaccuracies. Of course, and the level of inaccuracies of the Tekufot, the Shmuel, the ones that were based on the Julian calendar, which Pope Gregory corrected. We didn't have a Pope Gregory. I don't think we're, you know, as things look today, I'm not holding my breath for a Sanhedrin that's going to make any corrections. So Pope Gregory corrected a variety of things. We really don't have to worry about this. But what we'll see is if in the next 3,000 years we don't once get enough people together to have a, you know, togetherness so a Chazal can make some corrections, in about 3,000, you force me, I'd even say maybe 5 or 6,000 years, we're going to begin to experience things that we rather would not experience. I'll tell you a few, you know, comical notes about that next time as well. But if I will look at the screen, at the, are there any questions? That's, anyone can unmute themselves and ask anything.
There are a bunch of questions in the chat box. Do you want to read them or do you want me to?
Let me see if I can find them. Hold on. I should be able to find the chat box, but.
While you're looking for the chat box.
Please read them.
Okay, I'll read them to you.
By the time I can, I'm able to find you when I'm listening to Mark Shapiro.
Okay, we'll quickly go through it. Okay, somebody just pointing out the Muslim theologians did quote the Rambam. Okay, because you were saying the Rambam wasn't necessarily the greatest.
I'll tell you one thing, which I heard from Warren Harvey on that point. The more important, Muslims, after the Rambam, quoted the Rambam. But the most famous theologian of that time in the secular world is Thomas Aquinas. And Thomas Aquinas quotes the Rambam extensively. However, given the respect that he had for the Rambam, if he agrees with the Rambam, he always says, as Rabbi Moses said, if he disagrees, he doesn't tell you who he's quoting. He says, others say. To give you a sense of the Rambam's stature as a philosopher, that Thomas Aquinas would not want to let you know that he's in disagreement with the Rambam. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, cool. Okay. Donna pointing out what you sort of mentioned. He says here in 216 years, Pesach's going to begin moving. The calendar moves. So 216 years. In 3,000 years, then we'll worry about it then.
Correct. You'll see that that's not such a big problem.
Right.
It's not
okay.
The worst thing.
You will talk about
I'll explain that next time.
Okay. Let me hear quoting Dr. Herb Romer from Toronto. Maybe I can ask him to come on board. He's done a lot of work on the calendar. Okay.
He created a perfect calendar.
Herb Romer created a perfect calendar? Yes.
Yes. His calendar, as opposed to a 19-year cycle, has a cycle somewhere around 6,500 years.
Yeah, so I know he worked on the calendar for years and years and years. He would tell me what he's working on, but I didn't. Okay, good to hear. I'm going to tell him. He lives just a few blocks from here.
He has it really, you know, and basically what Chazal have to do within the next 6,000 years is drop an extra month and we're done. That's okay. Really, you know, that's basically they have to sort of do something like he did. But anyway.
Okay, that'll keep us going for another few thousand years. Okay.
Yeah, we are not going to be giving shiurim on Torah in motion. We'll all be somewhere in proximity of Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, well, okay. The mean solar times, okay. Somebody pointing out that the modern Molad moments match the mean solar time, the lunar conjunction moment near the meridian of Kandahar, Afghanistan. Okay. I'm not sure the significance of that, if you want to comment on that.
No, I don't. I didn't understand it. I'll look at the chat box later. I'll find it.
Okay. Somebody asking if you know about any calculations. He's Rabbi Sachs asking about any sheets for the calendar. Okay. I don't know if you have any show.
If you get a modern version of the tour has the corrected versions. I think there are various errors that have crept into the tour, and the most modern edition of the tour has a corrected calendar. I believe that Rabbi Kelman, if Lashman mentioned this now, for any of you who want real detail, look on YU Torah, Google for Soda Eber on YU Torah, and you will have 10 lectures by Rabbi Jeremy Weider on the calendar, and he will show you the tour. The tour is a little bit, you know, that his calendar, the Rambam doesn't give you a fixed calendar. Ah, here goes. No, it's not visible.
It's hard to see, but this is unbelievable. What the tour did in two pages here is astounding. Without a computer, I'm blown away by this. Once every 5 years, I give a share. I just explain how to use these two pages in the tour, but you have to give people the copy in advance. That you can look up in 4,000 years what day Rosh Hashanah is going to be, your bar mitzvah parsha is going to be, what's going to be double parshas that year, what day Tzom Gedalia is going to be. It's like unbelievable for anything. It's because there are 13 different types of years. Anyway, so that's for another time. But what the tour did is really quite amazing. Right. I thought 793 is just not divided by 3. So that's why, of course, you would use the 793 over 360, like 180. But anyways, okay.
Yeah. Correct. It's not a multiple of 3. You can't reduce it. Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think that's it for any questions. Unless anybody has any other comments. So next week, I gather you're going to finish the calendar a little bit. And you're going to move into the Chatam Sofer ending Shabbos, yes. 24 minutes after sunset in Budapest.
Yes, you know, those of you, did not tell you what the common theme between all these lectures are. But maybe by the end of the third one, it should begin to become obvious. But, you know, al regel achas, you know, I grew up in a Torah Ramada culture. I'm a violent believer in the importance of Torah Ramata, and that has something to do with the commonality, that without Mada, a lot of things become less obvious. But anyway, I thank you all for attending, and good night.
Okay, thank you very much. And by the way, with some Ellie pointing out the world ending in 6,000 years, that is the Ramban says, we don't accept that, Agada. That's in this famous dispute with Pablo Cristiani. So in other words, we don't have to worry about it because we're already at the year 5782, and we're really 150 years behind the problem with the Persian calendar that Rabbi Levi. So we're already into the 5900. So if the world's ending in the year 6,000, it's in our lifetime. So it's pretty soon. So, but the Ramban says that we don't accept that Gemara. So, anyways, that's again good. For another topic. Talking about more topics tomorrow, we got two shiurim. Tomorrow, 1:30, Rabbi Avram Kowalski will make his debut for Torah Motion. Rabbi, he's a very creative, thinker and speaker. He's, lived in Baltimore for many years, made Aliyah a number of years ago, practiced law, but was to give many, many, many shiurim. He teaches at the OU Center, so he'll be talking about four different issues in Sefer Shmot next week. Tomorrow, I believe the topic is why Sefer Shmot is not called Exodus, why it's called the Book of Shmot. He's a creative thinker. Hope you can make it. That's 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 in Israel. And then tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, our continuing series on the evolving nature of Tanakh, Dr. Sokolow continues. And Thursday, Shuli Mishkin will pick up with another series at 12 noon. And the Parsha Shir this week will be given by Rabbi Moshe Shulman, Young Israel of St. Louis. Used to be rabbi for a number of years here in Toronto. And Friday morning, please God, I'll be continuing my shiur on the Siddur. Menachem Levtag is 1 week off between his series, so he won't be speaking this Sunday. He'll pick up his next series a week from Sunday. And then next week, Alex Israel will begin a 10-part series on Eliyahu, Prophet of Fire, I think is what it's called. That's going to be our new class beginning next week. So we look forward to learning with you and Rabbi Gwertz, Dr. Gwertz. Look forward to seeing you. Rabbi Dr. Gwertz, we look forward to seeing you. Well, it's okay. It's all right. It's okay. Not that I have the power to give smicha, but whatever.
Correct. I don't want to have to live up to higher standards.
Yeah. All right, everybody. If anybody questions, comments, we look forward to seeing you. Invite a friend, please. As we start, we look forward to to you and your friends. Okay, global warming. Yeah, the world ending at 60. Yeah, don't ask. Okay. I'm working. Yeah, 6,000 years. That'll take, global warming will take longer. Nuclear war would be shorter, but let's prefer to talk about COVID. Now COVID's a better subject. Okay. Pardon my, my craziness here, but everybody have a good night and be well. We look forward to learning with you. All the best. Thank you very much. Bye bye.